Some coins are, you're out in the marketplace, you drop a little copper coin, and, well, I can't find it, it's gone down into a cobblestone somewhere. You drop a gold coin, you rip the place apart.
You see? Welcome to Radio Free School.
Up that one.
Maybe. This one's heavier.
That's
can
a heavy coin.
It? Can I pick it up? Oh,
it's heavy.
Is it heavier? Make sure you remember where you put them back.
That's a little silver coin.
Emma, where was this? Okay. Right here.
This one's a little heavier.
Yeah, that's a denarius. That's a half denarius.
Can I pick this one
this
up?
Is a full denarius. That's a sestertius, that coin. That's basically the same as this coin here.
All right.
Yeah. I'm Bruce Brace, and I'm the honorary curator of the numismatic collections at McMaster Museum of Art. Numismatic is simply the science of coins and metals. Just as I can add, philately is the science of stamps.
Why, when, and where was money made?
In the West. That is, the Western world, coins were first produced in an area called Lydia in Asia Minor. Asia Minor is modern Turkey. And the area of Lydia was just off the coast of the Aegean Sea. Now, the Lydians produced the first coins, let's say, around approximately 625 BC. We don't know an exact date. Why were they made? Well, there are quite a few theories as to why. In one instance, people feel that it was to simplify commerce. So in the past, in fact, even today in parts of the world, a lot of people do business by barter. You know, I'll give you two chickens for a liter of wheat or something like that. So as a result, if they have values attached to different things, then money can simply change hands and it makes it very easy to do business. Whereas you may have exchanged for a cow and then you discover you got the cow home and the cow died. And your transaction just died. Some other people feel that it had a lot to do with military things. That is, to pay armies. And that's a theory that is quite well accepted by many people. But probably it's a combination of the two, and there may be other reasons too. But in the East, Chinese had money, although not coins as we know them, going back to maybe 1500 BC. And they were cast in various shapes, like agricultural implements. Eventually, they got to producing round coins rather than these strange-looking knives and spades. Generally, it's believed, and I think quite correctly, that the Lydian coins and many of the coins produced along the coast of the Aegean Sea in Asia Minor were made of a metal called electrum. And electrum is an artificial mixture of gold and silver, which came out of stream beds. And the problem with electrum
is that you don't get the same mixture every time. You may have a lot of gold and a little silver. You may have a lot of silver and a little gold. So that determining value for some of these early coins could be very difficult. So very quickly, they went to almost pure gold and almost pure silver. Then later on, bronze coins, that is, copper and bronze, are what you would find in your one-cent pieces. I don't use the term pennies because our coins are cents, not pennies. Basically, bronze is copper with a little bit of tin. And the tin is put in the copper because copper is soft and tin hardens the metal. So you find bronze, copper, as the Romans called it, ius, A-E-S, ius. Base, almost, they're almost token coins. For a long time, there was a struggle to balance the value of copper to silver and gold. But it was very difficult to determine. It was fluctuating, going up and down all the time. And for a little gold coin, you'd have to have a copper coin of a very large size to equate in value. So they gave up on that idea, so that bronze coins now are pretty well, we consider them token coins. A cent produced by the Royal Canadian Mint today actually costs more than a cent to make. And the mint continues to try to reduce the weight and the material itself to at least try to break even. The manufacture of coins, if you go to the mint in Ottawa or in Winnipeg, most of our circulating coins are produced in Winnipeg, the Royal Canadian Mint in Winnipeg. And you'll see great big presses, electrically driven presses, and hoppers with blanks, and feed systems that drop the blanks into the press, and the press is going bang, 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 knocking the coins out at a tremendous rate. And that's generally how coins are made today all over the world. In ancient days, in the West, what they had to do was they had an upper die, a piece of metal, think of a piece of round stock, with a design cut in the upper face, another piece of round stock, and that would be put in an anvil or something very solid, more solid than a table. And the upper die was similar, and it had a pattern cut in the one face. And then the blank of gold or silver would be put on top of the lower die, on top of the design, which is sunken, by the way, because it's got to be in reverse. And then the upper die would be put on top of it, and then a heavy, heavy hammer would pound the up down on the upper die. And the force would impress the designs into both sides of the coin. So you can imagine inserting a blank between two dies, trying to line up the dies. They didn't always line up, by the way. That's why some ancient coins are slightly off-center. Some amazingly so. And then taking a sledgehammer and going vomp, and you produced one coin. Whereas in modern days, there's a press going bang, 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 bang. Coins are flipping out faster than the eye can see them. So it's a very slow process. But in the mints, they often employed slaves, and slaves didn't get paid anything. They got room and board. The room and board wasn't great. So they'd have many of these workstations all going at the same time. And many issues of ancient coins were produced by the millions. So ancient coins from the ancient Western world, and indeed from China, there are millions and millions of them around. There, you think an ancient coin's got to be rare? Not really. Some are, but hordes of ancient coins are turning up all the time.
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
It is so heavy.
Oh, look at this.
Mm-hmm.
so huge.
Let's give it
imagine, Daddy, imagine handing it to a store lady.
In the Western world, and indeed in the Orient, coin hoards are turning up all the time. And that's largely because in ancient times they didn't have banks as we know them. So as a result, if you're wealthy enough to have some coins, and a lot of people didn't, they're lucky to have a few bronze pieces. You're a businessman of some kind, imported wheat into Rome or something like that. You'd get paid, and you'd put your money in a pot, and then you'd figure out, what do I do with the pot? So if you had a villa, you might lift a stone in the kitchen floor, dig a hole, put the pot in there, drop the flagstone back into place, and then you'd leave it there until you needed some money, then you go into your little vault, homemade vault. On the other hand, maybe the Vandals came through, a raiding tribe. You and your family were killed, and your villa was leveled. So what happens? There it sits, this hoard of, say, 1,000 silver denarii in the ground, doing nothing, until recently, somebody would be maybe plowing, and the plow would dig up the lime, the flagstone, hit the pot, and all of a sudden there's these coins all over the place. Now in recent times, in the last, 20, 30 years, maybe a bit longer, metal detectors are everywhere. So if you're in Europe, or even the Middle East, you have a metal detector, you go around obvious sites, and you'd be doing that, because you'd be finding brooches and rings and objects of gold and silver or copper or bronze and coins. And it might be one coin, it might be a hoard of coins. Coin hoards and treasure finds are dealt with in various ways by various countries. In a country like Denmark and most European countries, anything found in the ground belongs to the state. That's the way it is in Turkey. And it's so severe in Turkey that if you want to collect coins, you have to have a license. In England, the English in this are very enlightened in that, and there are many metal detector clubs in England, by the way. So if you find something, say in a farmer's field, you report it to the local archaeologists. They have local archaeology centers. And they come out and then they start to trench or dig around the area to see what else is there. The coins you find are then go to this archaeological center. They're recorded and photographed and anything like that. The major museums have an opportunity to buy at market value any coins they want. The British Museum, for example, who have well over 1 million coins in their collection, will buy it from you for fair market value. That doesn't tend to happen in most countries, though.
Ticket, win a lottery, scoop the pearls up from the sea, cash them in and buy you all the things you need. Every night before I rest my head, those dollar bills go swirling at my bed. I know they're stolen, but I don't feel bad. I take that money, buy a
jet plane, babe. Get you on a high plane to a jet stream and take you through the stratosphere and check out the planet flim and take you down deep where it's hot, hot in Arabia, baby. Then cool, cold in fields of snow and we'll roll, drain, roll, drain, roll, roll, drain, drain. When we're dreaming, when we're dreaming, when we're dreaming.
Most of the city-states, you have to remember, Greece wasn't a unified in any way. It was just a hodgepodge of cities, large and small. Some of them were great, like Athens. But generally, each state was going to coin, and that was prestige to coin, would put a design on the coin appropriate to that city-state. Athens, for example, used the helmeted head of the goddess Pallas Athena. And she was the sort of the state deity. Mm-hmm. They worshiped many gods in those days. And on the reverse, a tiny owl, well, not so tiny, but an owl, standing looking at you. Mm-hmm. And the owl was selected because that was the creature of Pallas Athena. That was an animal attached to her. Just as the god Zeus, the great god on Olympus, the eagle was his particular creature. We don't know how coin designs were selected. Was there a committee that did it? Was it a dictator or a tyrant of a particular city? What were the religious implications? Because on Greek coins, gods and goddesses were more often not to be found on the coins. And I should add, earlier, for example, we were talking about minting coins. In China, the coins up until about 1889 were cast. And most of them were cast in a very base metal. And they would literally cast a tree of them. They'd be, if you can think of a branch with the coins coming off the branch. And then once they had made the casting, they'd simply break the coins off the tree, and they're in business. There were counterfeit coins in the ancient world.
Yeah.
The state usually had individuals, magistrates of some kind, who were responsible for the production of the coins. They would authorize the striking of the coins, and each city-state would have its own mint with its hundreds of slaves. And indeed, Rome, in around 270, we know, the workers in the Rome mint numbered 5,000.
And they were unhappy at that time, and they revolted. And the emperor put them down. Paper money is an early invention. Going back to notes printed in mulberry bark in the Ming Dynasty of China, modern paper money is simply a reflection of sort of the ease of producing. It's very inexpensive to produce paper money. Although, when you look at the engraving on paper money, the plates themselves are beautifully elaborate and wonderful designs and so on. Coins, our modern coins, you'll sometimes find a design is selected and it'll be used for many years. But many mints of the world are now using coinage to advertise a wide variety of things. For instance, we've had a series of quarters produced by the Royal Canadian Mint, one quarter for each province. And then there are theme quarters that have been produced on a wide variety of themes, some relating to the year of the child, and they used a child's design to cut the reverse die. They have proved to be very popular among youngsters for collecting, because you can pull them out of change, and that's kind of fun to do. Now, when I was a kid, 60 plus years ago, you could go to the bank and you could get rolls of what were then large cents, almost, but not quite, twice the size of our modern cent. And they'd be Queen Victoria, King Edward VII, George V. And you could go through there and you could pull out the dates, because many people collect by date. One doesn't think of this in terms of date collecting for ancient coins, although many ancient coins are dated. In ancient coins, some of them had a date from the founding of the city, or when the city got its freedom from, say, the emperors of Syria, the first year of the freedom. And the Jews, for example, when they had their first revolt against Nero, 65, I think, they struck silver shekels the first year of the freedom of Zion, second year of the freedom of Zion, until the fifth year, and that's when the Romans finally conquered them. Many coins, Roman coins, can be dated simply because we know this was struck by the Emperor Trajan, and we know the Emperor Trajan reigned between 98 and 117 AD. So that coin can be at least pinned down to that block of time. Mm-hmm. There are other factors that one can look at the coin. You look at the inscriptions on the coin, the imperial titles in the case of Roman coins. And we know that the emperor such and such obtained the consulship in, 105 AD. So we know that coin was struck by 105. We may not have any other criteria, but we know the emperor died in 117. So that coin is produced somewhere in that period. But there are closer dates, and some of them you can pin down not only to a year, but because of the titles on the coin, you can actually pin it down to 2 or 3 months within the year when that coin was struck, which is something you normally can't do with Canadian coins, except that the quarters, remember, the quarters, one being produced in January, one in February, and so on, in the newer products of the Royal Canadian Mint. But they were sort of fun commemorative things. And as I remarked earlier, many people were lucky if they saw a silver coin. Two-thirds of a silver denarius, which is a roughly dime-sized silver coin of the Roman Empire, was the pay of a Roman legionary for one day. And that was a lot of money. Think of a day's pay and two-thirds of a little silver coin.
Yeah.
So as a result, it's very difficult to attach value to what would a coin buy. We have basic knowledge at different times that this little copper coin will buy, what is the equivalent today of a liter of pretty poor wine, or a modius, which is a bucket for measuring wheat, a modius of wheat. We have information like that at different times, but there isn't a lot of it. So there's an awful lot of guesswork with that. We have knowledge about what Roman soldiers were paid. Writers talk about some sums of money devoted to things, 50,000 sesterces for this and that. But generally, we have little information. This is called a gold aureus of the Emperor Nero. Have you ever heard of a guy by the name of Nero? Well, Nero wasn't a very nice guy. He reigned between 54 and 68 in the Christian era. And the Roman emperors produced gold coins called aurei, and aureus is Latin for gold. And this coin has the head of the Emperor Nero on it, as you can see. It's got his titles. Notice how pudgy he is, very fleshy. On the reverse, a seated woman with Sallust underneath. And Sallust was a sort of a goddess of well-being. Now hold your hand out so you don't drop it. Or notice that when I handle it, I actually hold it by the edge. It's heavy. That's gold.
Turn down the lights, kick off your shoes, and relax with that special someone.
She's got all the friends that money can buy. She's the apple of her daddy's eye.
Myself in paper, I'm gonna daub myself with glue, stick some stamps on the top of my head, I'm gonna mail myself to you.
contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.